this Grand Slam tournament, one of the big four, is much bigger than any one person.
Double fault for Djokovic in Australia. It's Monday, January 17th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, UN Emergency Fund is deployed. A flurry of North Korea launches. Remembering a civil rights leader. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Serbian tennis champion Novak Djokovic has been deported from Australia after losing an appeal to stay in the country. Australia canceled the visa of the world number one tennis player on health and public order grounds. From Melbourne, Phil Mercer reports.
Novak Djokovic's supporters believe he's been unfairly treated by Australia after arriving in Melbourne last week. They said his deportation was inhumane and outrageous. After the Chief Justice of the Federal Court of Australia, James Allsop, rejected Djokovic's last-ditch attempt to remain in the country.
The orders of the court are, one, the amended application be dismissed with costs, two, reasons to be published at a later date. Those are the orders of court.
The Serbian tennis player was granted a medical waiver from Australia's COVID-19 vaccination rules by two independent health panels set up by the Victoria State Government and Australian tennis authorities. Djokovic had been infected with the virus in December. However, his visa was cancelled when he arrived at Melbourne Airport January 5 by Border Force officials, who said he'd flouted immigration rules. He was sent to an immigration detention hotel in Melbourne. His visa was reinstated by an Australian judge on Monday, but it was revoked for a second time by Immigration Minister Alex Hawke on Friday. Djokovic isn't inoculated against COVID-19, and Hawke asserted that his presence in Australia would stir anti-vaccination sentiment, and cancelled his visa on health and public interest grounds. The tennis champion's lawyers insisted the government's argument was irrational and illogical. The three federal court judges unanimously disagreed, and Djokovic's appeal Sunday was dismissed. Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews said the Australian Open will not be diminished by the Serbian player's absence.
This Grand Slam tournament, one of the big four, is much bigger than any one person. Much bigger. That's why it's a Grand Slam. That's why it's the biggest thing in tennis in the first quarter of every year.
Djokovic has won the Australian Open title nine times. Had he triumphed at this year's tournament, he would have become the most successful men's Grand Slam champion with 21 titles. Before he left Australia, he said in a statement that he was extremely disappointed with the court ruling, but he respected the decision and would cooperate with the relevant authorities in relation to my departure from the country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Melbourne.
Much more on this story can be found online. Check us out on Twitter at VOA Asia, as well as Facebook and the VOAnews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. North Korea train makes first crossing into China since border lockdown, according to reports. China tries to contain Omicron outbreak ahead of Winter Olympics. Third blow for millions in India's vast informal sector as cities impose curbs. Texas hostage taking draws attention to Pakistani woman imprisoned in United States. Afghan tradition allows girls to access the freedom of boys. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found daily online. Just visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter. And, of course, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. The United Nations is allocating $150 million from its Central Emergency Response Fund to support seriously underfunded humanitarian operations in 13 countries in Asia, Africa, the Americas, and the Middle East. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Topping the list of underfunded crises are Syria, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Sudan. These countries will receive between $20 and $25 million each to help them implement life-saving humanitarian operations. International support for Syria has all but dissipated after more than a decade of conflict. Some 13 million refugees and internally displaced Syrians are living in a state of destitution with little recourse to basic relief. The DRC is one of the longest and most complex humanitarian crises. Millions of people are suffering from conflict, displacement, epidemics, and acute hunger. The United Nations warns the humanitarian crisis in Sudan is deepening as political instability grows and the country contends with flooding, rising food prices, and disease outbreaks. Jens Laerke is the spokesman for the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. He says the distribution of funds made by Emergency Relief Coordinator Martin Griffiths is the largest ever. He says it beats last year's $135 million by $15 million.
This announcement of funding will help the prioritization of life-saving projects to respond to, for example, food security, nutrition, health, and protection needs. More detailed strategies are expected from these countries later this month.
Other recipient countries include Myanmar, where the UN is providing aid to some 3 million people suffering from conflict, COVID-19, and a failing economy. UN aid also will go to Burkina Faso, Chad, and Niger, three countries in Africa's central Sahel that are struggling with mass displacement because of armed attacks. Laerke says these countries, as well as six others in dire straits in Africa, the Middle East, and the Americas, including Haiti and Honduras, will receive between $5 and $12 million each from the UN fund to help them tackle their emergency needs.
These allocations happen twice a year to countries selected because of their low level of funding, severity of humanitarian needs, and vulnerability. These countries have just entered a new cycle of humanitarian fundraising and program implementation on the back of underfunded appeals from last year, all below 50% covered at year's end.
Humanitarian needs are growing across the world. The United Nations says it expects at least 274 million people will need humanitarian assistance in 2022. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, a flurry of activity from North Korea. Happening now in Asia, hundreds of thousands of Japanese citizens were advised to evacuate Sunday as waves more than a meter high hit coastal areas after the eruption of an underwater volcano off Tonga triggered tsunami warnings. Around 230,000 people were advised to evacuate across eight prefectures due to the tsunami risk, including areas hit by the deadly 2011 tsunami. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're off to a brand new week. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. North Korea fired what appears to be two short-range ballistic missiles in its third weapons launch this past week. The missile launches are an apparent reprisal for fresh sanctions imposed by the Biden White House. South Korea's military says the missiles came from an inland area in western North Pyongan province and landed in the sea. Leon Panetta, the former U.S. Secretary of Defense and former CIA director, commented on North Korea's three missile tests last week. Panetta tells VOA Korean reporter Young Gyo Kim that the tests have raised fears the North is developing a hypersonic missile that can go nearly 10 times the speed of sound and possibly be an entry vehicle that maneuvers on its own, which makes it more difficult to defend against.
I consider that to be very provocative on the part of North Korea. And the result is that it clearly adds to the tensions, not just between North and South Korea, but between North Korea and the United States and our allies.
You served as Secretary of Defense and Director of CIA during the Obama administration. How has the security environment changed since then, especially surrounding Korean Peninsula?
I think the tensions have increased since I was in office and dealing with North Korea. I mean, we were worried about North Korea then. We were tracking them as closely as we could with regards to their activities. They were they conducted missile tests at the time that I was director of the CIA. The good news is that we were aware of what they were up to. We could take actions to try to deal with that. I think what's happened now is that we've been through this period where, you know, it looked like perhaps when President Trump was in office, that somehow through the strength of personalities, they might be able to resolve some of the differences. But I think the failure of the talk to achieve anything meaningful in terms of dealing with their nuclear stockpile and their nuclear abilities, I think the failure to achieve anything has to the tensions that we're now facing. And I think to some extent, North Korea is trying to figure out how to continue to get the attention of the world. I mean, they had the attention of President Trump, which is a pretty high level attention getting capability. Now that fell apart. And I think to some extent, Kim Jong-un is trying to figure out how does he get the attention of the world again. And that's why he's conducting these tests.
What is your thought on how the Biden administration has been handling North Korea so far?
Well, in many ways, they really haven't been paying that much attention because of other issues that obviously have consumed the attention of the president.
Former U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta speaking with VOA Korean reporter Younggyo Kim. As the United States observes Martin Luther King Jr. Day on this Monday, which recognizes the black American pastor internationally known as a symbol for civil rights, Laurel Bowman reports on how social justice issues continue to play a central role in U.S. politics.
Today I want to say to the people of America and the nations of the world, we're on the move and no wave of racism can stop us.
Martin Luther King Jr.'s rise as a civil rights leader began in 1955 when he spearheaded the drive to desegregate public buses in the southern state of Alabama. He went on to lead peaceful national movements pushing for equal rights. In 1964, King won the Nobel Peace Prize, and that same year, U.S. President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and the following year, the Voting Rights Act. The measures outlawed racial segregation in public places and discriminatory practices that kept blacks from voting.
I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
The U.S. Justice Department paid tribute to King in a virtual forum.
Dr. King has had a tremendous impact on all our lives, and his legacy of hope and his fierce commitment to justice and equality remain present in our day-to-day work at the Civil Rights Division.
Many civil rights leaders say King's struggle to secure equal voting rights remains painfully relevant today.
What Dr. King is saying, give us the ballot so that we can elect judges who will be just. Give us the ballot so that we can elect representatives who will carry our voice forward. Give us the ballot so that we can elect people who will understand what a criminal justice system is supposed to be.
I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
King was assassinated in 1968, but decades later, his famous words still inspire many to keep working for racial justice, an issue that remains a central part of America's national dialogue. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
We're glad you shared some time with us today on VOA Asia. Continue online. You'll find us at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.